Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So this might be a needle in a haystack, but we're going to do a call-in now for those of you who came into this world because of in vitro fertilization, or for those of you who were able to have a baby as a result of the procedure. But we definitely want test tube babies yourselves to call in if you're out there. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, because congratulations, as of yesterday, you have a Nobel Prize winning birth. Did you know that? Yesterday, Dr. Robert Edwards, the British biologist who developed in vitro fertilization, won the Nobel Prize in medicine. And since this news might mean more to some of our listeners than other Nobel Prizes given out this year, on a personal level, we are going to give you some voice, some airtime about what this does mean in your personal life. So if you describe yourself, or if others described you, as a test tube baby, and we know it's really in a Petri dish and not in a tube, but that's the common terminology. If your parents use the IVF procedure in order to bring you into the world, we want to hear your reactions to Dr. Edwards' win. Are you proud of the prize? How do you feel about Dr. Edwards and this invention? Call us 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And parents, this is for you too. Tell us about your experience with the procedure and tell us how you reacted maybe emotionally to this Nobel Prize announcement. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for test tube babies and your parents, or post it to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. We are joined now to help take your calls by Robin Morantz-Henning, a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine and author of the book Pandora's Baby, How the First Test Tube Babies Sparked the Reproductive Revolution. Hi, Robin. Thanks for coming on today.
Hi, Brian.
So it was 1978 that Louise Brown, the first test tube baby, was born. And since then, estimates are nearly that 4 million babies around the world have been conceived with a procedure. Your op-ed in the Times today says IVF is now used so often that it's practically routine. So how did you feel, you know, having studied this so intensely when you heard about this Nobel Prize?
Well, I thought it was great. I thought it was, you know, a little long in coming. And I did reflect on what things were like back in the 70s when Robert Edwards was doing his work. He was really reviled. People thought that he was doing monstrous work, that he was Frankenstein-like. So it shows how far we've come in those 30 years.
Let's take our first caller, but calling anonymously from Manhattan. Hi, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. I just wanted to remind you that most of those in vitro kids are going to be in school, or at least they should be.
That's true. Some of them could be in their 20s, though, by now.
Yeah. Well, anyway, my high schooler, I am thrilled that I have her, and I was elated that he won the Nobel Prize. It is long in coming.
Are you calling anonymously because you don't want somebody to know?
Well, I feel like it's my daughter's business to decide who she does and doesn't want to know. So most of my close friends do know. But
did you tell her, and what was that discussion like?
I think it was my sisters that told her first. They thought that I should not live in denial, but they were unsuccessful with in vitro. And
is it a casual thing as far as your daughter is concerned? Is it a source of her identity in any way?
Well, I think not, because I did it alone without her dad.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the harder thing.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Having a snowflake daughter, I mean, the fact that she could have been a twin with another child a couple years later was kind of thrilling to her, but that was mm-hmm. not successful. But it was kind of an oddity that I was excited about having a twin of a different age.
Thank you for having the courage to call in. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. Bye.
That's great. Robin, she probably speaks for a lot of people.
Oh, yes. And actually, when the first test tube baby was being awaited, people were reflecting on what it might be like to tell her at some point how she was conceived. And, you know, I spoke to the first American test tube baby, Elizabeth Carr, who's now about 29, I think, and has had her own baby. And she said that when she was told how she was conceived, it was no weirder to her than the way everybody else was conceived. You know, she was a little kid, and the whole story is weird, whether it's in the test tube or not.
And here is Kate in Tuckahoe calling in. Hi, Kate. Thanks so much for calling.
Oh, thanks.
You're pregnant?
So, yeah.
My screener tipped me off.
Yeah. And I was telling her I may be a little bit emotional because of that. But I do have to say, when I heard the news yesterday on the radio, I started to cry. I think that what these doctors, and I'm sorry that the gynecologist didn't receive the Nobel as well, he had passed away already, but what they've done for so many people is just amazing. And, you know, personally, it's amazing to me that I'm going to be able to have a child because of this. You know, it's wonderful.
Thank you very much for calling in. Congratulations and good luck.
Thanks.
And Robin, there's a new controversy now, different perhaps from what Dr. Edwards faced over 30 years ago when people thought he was creating Frankenstein monsters or whatever. There are multiple births. Sometimes, you know, the octomom and whatever, so commonly to people who use IVF, whether it's just twins or whether it's really multiple births. How do you view that?
Well, I think I can understand why people want to put back more than one embryo at a time when they're doing IVF, because they're hoping that at least one of the three or four that they put in will take. But it really does increase the risk of multiple births. And, you know, the mothers are happy when they hear that they're carrying twins because they've been infertile. It's been such a long road for them. They think it's an instant family. But even twins are a higher risk of, you know, for all sorts of birth defects and pregnancy complications. So I would much prefer seeing doctors put back one embryo at a time. It just feels like there's not enough time to wait until something really does work.
When you say put back?
Well, I mean when you you know, create this fertilized egg in a test in a petri dish, not a test tube, as you pointed out.
Yes.
And allow it to develop into an embryo over the course of a couple of days, then you put it into the uterus of the woman whose egg you used. Or in other variations, you put it into the uterus of a surrogate mother or, you know, any number of things. I mean, some of the controversy now is not actually about what you do with IVF, but what you do with the procedure that IVF uses. That's the procedure that leads to things like designer babies or clones. I mean, these are you have to begin with that first step of fertilizing an egg in a petri dish.
Maybe Kathy in West Islip wants to reflect on this, since she had twins through IVF. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, yes. I have 16-year-old twins now, wonderful, beautiful girls. It was a real blessing. I was so happy to hear that he got the Nobel Prize. I did have three embryos implanted and was very happy to have twins. I have known people that have ended up with triplets and have lost them with the same procedure, and I think it's absolutely horrifying when you hear about things like octomoms and people basically having litters of children, which human beings were never meant to have.
How do you balance that in your judgment of the whole thing with, you know, the enabling of yourself to have children at all?
Well, as I think it's an incredibly wonderful thing, and, you know, the joy of my life that I've had children, and they're wonderful people who make great contributions to the world. On the other hand, you know, people tend, you know, some people go to excess. And not only are they're risking the lives of these children, I've seen multiples that have been born, you know, very premature and have health problems. And disabling problems for the rest of their lives, and mm-hmm. that just seems to me to be incredibly greedy on the parents' part. When and especially now that the procedures have gotten better and there's a much greater success rate at actually having babies through IVF, I don't see any reason for, you know, multiple embryo transplants.
So what number is okay? Three? Four?
Well, twins is perfect, I think. Twins is it's a handful, but it's enough, and it's a wonderful relationship. I think every child that's added on as a multiple is just increasing the risk of serious health problems for the children.
Thank you so much for calling. Robin, go ahead.
The fertility clinics are self-regulated. There's a voluntary agency that sort of sends out what the procedure should be. And at first, they were putting back like 5 to 7 embryos at a time.
And the reason for that was to have a greater chance that at least one would come to birth?
Right. You're just playing the odds. And in those days, they didn't implant quite as successfully as they do now. There's all sorts of things that they've managed to do that increases the success rate. So now the centers are kind of advising no more than 2 or 3 at a time.
Francine in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hi, Francine.
Yes, I just wanted to say my name's Francine Mafio. I'm 59 now, but I had 2 older boys and 1 boy. So I had a tragic accident. So I have a 30-year-old, and I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old.
Wow.
And I just wanted to say that this is one of the happiest days of my life, that there's been this award in recognition of in vitro fertilization as legitimate in the eyes of both the scientific, but also in the eyes of the conventional wisdom community. I've had a lot of different reactions. I had in vitro fertility treatments when I was 50 onward, and I have, gotten reactions, some from women mostly that are my age or a little older. Some were very happy, and some were very aghast at the fact that I would be so greedy, quote-unquote, to actually, want to reverse the process of nature.
They see it as greedy.
And here I was, I said, gee, this would be great, I have a house, I have a yard, I love kids. Wouldn't it be nice to share some more? We had so much fun with our 2 older boys. It was just amazing.
You'll be
and
70 with teenagers.
Good health.
You'll be 70 with teenagers in the house, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, I think maybe I'll be able to handle it a little better.
Francine, thank you.
The only thing is that my 6-year-old, I had fallen down a step recently, told me to get a hover around for Christmas. But, aside from that, I have talked with them a little bit. They're only 4 and 6 about the process. And you'd be surprised, at some point it's still abstract. But they understand to, a very small extent and, just are very happy to be here.
I'll bet they're happy to be here. Francine, thank you so much for calling in. We really, really appreciate it. Robin, your reaction to that call?
I'm really delighted to hear how happy she is. And so I can understand all the, the joy that these children have brought her. But having in vitro fertilization in somebody who's 50 is, to many people, somebody who's too old. And it's a limited technology, less limited now. I mean, it used to be the case that they didn't even do in vitro over about 40 because it was so, there were so few centers, it was so difficult on the mother, and it was just a matter of rationing it. I imagine she had a little bit of trouble, though, finding a doctor who was willing to do it at 50.
And what would the controversy be? Just because she would be so old as they're growing up, or why not?
Well, mostly that. Also, she probably wasn't using her own eggs, so that complicates things a bit. And I think that there's some feeling that pregnancy is harder on a 50-year-old body than on a 30-year-old body.
That's her choice.
There's all sorts of physical reasons and also, sort of societal reasons.
One other thing before you go, and my guest is Robin Moranz-Hennig, author of Pandora's Baby, How the First Test Tube Babies Sparked the Reproductive Revolution, as we've also been taking calls from test tube moms, as it turns out, on the occasion of the Nobel Prize for Medicine being awarded to the developer of in vitro fertilization. There's an issue of wealth, right, and socioeconomic class. It's certainly more common in developed countries, and I imagine in the higher socioeconomic ends of developed countries, IVF births account for 3% of all babies born in the United States, I think.
Right, about that.
But, I'm sure if you go to Brazil or the Dominican Republic or India or wherever, it's not going to be that.
Right. Well, it's a little bit less of a wealth thing now because a lot of insurance companies now pay for it, mm-hmm. or at least a big chunk of it. Mm-hmm. It used to be the case that it was all out of pocket and it was, you know, $15,000 or $20,000 a pop, which is also why they would put back more than one embryo because you mm-hmm. paid per cycle. But even with insurance covering it, it is something that the higher classes generally do.
Robin Morantz Hennig, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Congratulations to all of you with children born through in vitro fertilization. We can hear from our callers what a wonderful and emotional moment this has been, hearing Dr. Edwards was awarded the Nobel Prize for Medicine. Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up next. Film critic Dana Stevens returns with New York Times business columnist Joe Nocera today to review the new Wall Street movie. Is it Gordon Gekko meets credit default swaps? Stay with us.